Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Great to be with you on a Thursday. And if it's Thursday, it must mean Kevin's closer to his 18th vacation of the year.
No, it's not that close.
We're getting there. Was it July 6th?
Yes. Well, technically the 3rd, but...
Oh, that's right. Yes, I forgot. Yes, I have to make all these adjustments in my schedule to make sure you're properly taken care of.
It's about time.
About time.
It's about time you made concessions from me.
Oh, jeez. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15. In Hummel's Wharf. The NBA draft is tonight. We're going to talk about that. And was it Bob from Muncie called yesterday? I hope I have his first name. It was Bob, wasn't it?
I believe it was, yes.
And he made very good, very impassioned points about Pete Rose. Yes, Pete Rose, the talk show gift that just keeps on giving. It is all of that. I mean, it's amazing. I have been amazed over the years the passion with which people defend Pete Rose. I have no idea what he has done in his career to inspire such loyalty. Unless, of course, you're a Cincinnati Reds fan. Now, I completely understand that. You're a Cincinnati Reds fan. Oh, I guess if you're a Phillies fan.
Yeah, I was going to say, he had a lot to do with the Phillies' success there for a while.
Yeah, he caught a foul ball. I got it.
He played next to Manny Trio.
Yeah. He brought the winning attitude, blah, 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 blah.
Right,
blah, blah, blah,
exactly.
Blah. Sure, blah, 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 blah.
Well, look, historically, did the Phillies have a winning attitude? I don't think so.
Well, they made the playoffs.
That's true.
When he was still with the Reds.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
All right. But
now, did he make them better? Yeah. Was he on the tail end of his career? Yeah.
The Phillies today.
No, you had Mike Schmidt.
Well, they're not making anybody better, but the tail end of the career part.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I guess the fans in this area would be like, oh, Pete. I, on the other hand, have no dog in the hunt. So it doesn't matter to me. I can look at Rule 21D and realize you're gone. Pete Rose not being in the Hall of Fame is not tragic. And it's also not unfair. As an example, what's happening to young Leah Still is tragic and is massively unfair.
I was going to say, it's definitely unfair.
Okay, that's tragic and that's unfair. With Pete Rose, who has lived a long, fruitful life, has reached the pinnacle of his profession, has stood in championship locker rooms, has been praised for all the records he's broken. Well, there's only one thing in his baseball career he hasn't accomplished. Well, that's all it is. One thing he's never accomplished in a star-studded, highly praised, loved by many baseball career. There's only one part he didn't accomplish. And he hasn't accomplished it because he broke Rule 21D, which is, which has been a rule that's been there for decades and has absolute wording to it. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Right? That's what it comes down to. The passion with which people argue for him to be in, I'll give you a good example. In this, Bob and Muncy, I thought he brought up a very interesting point. Because I have said, and I'll continue to say, that one of the reasons that this rule is important, whether you bet for your team or against your team, is that if you do bet with the wrong people, the door is then open to, quote, the wrong people, with you falling behind financially, to make certain requests of you to try and even the score. That may go against everything that you want, but now you're stuck. That is a consequence. That's why the rule, that's one of the many reasons the rule is in place. Bob did correctly point out yesterday that there's no proof that Rose was asked to do that. My point has always been, yes, but when you're doing this, you are on that path that makes it a possibility. Bob is correct. There is no proof that that was ever carried out. He is correct. Christopher Russo on Mad Dog Sports Radio on Sirius had John Dowd on his show. And Russo asked Dowd if there was any proof whatsoever as to whether Pete gave it less than his best effort in a game. And Dowd said, no, there's no proof of that at all, that Rose gave anything less than his best effort. He says, there's no proof of that whatsoever. But that's also a judgment call when you look at it. But the rule is the rule, and betting against your team is worse. Betting for your team is absolutely wrong, too. And by the way, if you, and just so you realize, betting on other teams, say, for example, Kevin is the manager of the Phillies, and he decides to bet on the Dodger-Giants game. The Rule 21D would not ban Kevin permanently from baseball. It would ban him for 1 year if he bet on another game besides the one he was actively participating in. Dave in Sunbury. Dave, good afternoon. Welcome to the show at 800-795-9565.
Steve, I got a quick question, and I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I had it and lost it. He played linebacker for the Buffalo Bills, and he was a New Orleans head coach before the coach they have now. He was hired as a consultant for the Penn State. I came across the ticker.
Yeah, you're talking about Jim Haslett.
Yeah. I was talking to my brother this morning about that, and then I said, I'm going to call you, and then the name just went away. You know what I mean? I couldn't find it.
Yeah, you know what? Kevin does that to me every day. Suddenly the name just goes away.
Gone.
So what exactly is he going to do?
Well, he's going to be a sounding board for everything that goes on around there. Mm. That's what he'll do. In other words, hey, You know, what do you think about what we're doing here, how we're doing this? What's your observation as to how this element of the operation is going? And
okay.
he'll be an important part to give them an extra set of eyes that can look at the big picture for them and help them out.
Feedback.
Yep.
Okay.
And I think he'll be invaluable. I've always been a long proponent, Dave, that with all due respect to other sports, that in football and men's basketball, you know, by using your own revenue, obviously, and being autonomous in using your own revenue, that you need to invest in those two sports as much as you can, because those are the two sports that give you the financial opportunity to then get it back and then some. Because it's the then some that then goes to help all the other sports to make sure that they are financially stable. That's why those two sports, I've always been in favor of investing what you need within, obviously, the realm of possibility that's reasonable. I've always felt investing in that, those two sports meant more than anything else, because there's the possibility of a return plus. Investing in other sports at that particular level, right, is just going to be spending the money that you'll never get back. This, you know, and that's why I've always been in favor of things such as these in those two sports.
Okay, one final thing, and then I'm watching the Dodgers play the Cubs.
Yep.
John Lester's on the mound for Cubs.
Yep.
In his three innings so far, he's thrown 65 pitches.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't good. Huh?
Nope. Too many. But the big part is, Dave, let me know if John Lester gets a hit. He's never had a hit in the game.
Okay. And,
all right.
Yeah, and they got two in the first and two in the second. They kept him off the board in the third, or he'd be like, you know, two every inning. And that ain't so good for the pitcher.
No, it's not. And the Cubs are paying him a lot of money to be better than that.
I'll let you go, Steve.
Thanks, Dave. You too. Back with more after this. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. The passion with which people defend me. I was mentioning Christopher Mad Dog Russo at John Dowd on yesterday. And he asked John Dowd, he says, look, I mean, was there any proof that Pete ever gave anything less than his best effort and so on and so forth? Dowd said, no. And Dowd said, it doesn't make any difference. And Russo said, yes, it does. It doesn't make a difference. Right? It does not make a difference. Right? If you read the rule is very specific. It doesn't say whether you bet for your team or against your team. It just says betting. If you place a bet on the game, you can't do it. That's why you get and it's very specific. If you bet on other teams, for example, umpire, employee, manager, player, even the receptionist, if the receptionist does this, the rule says you're banned for 1 year. If you bet on the game you're playing in or are an active participant in, coach, umpire, player, employee, this even says employee. Guess what? It's right, it's spelled out. You're permanently ineligible. It's almost like there's some sort of virtue to this that, well, he bet on them to win. Is it better than betting on you to lose? Yeah, I'll agree. I will agree with that part. But that's, to me, that's just a line. Like, there's a gigantic line. And then there's this subline. The subline is whether you bet on the team to win or lose. Okay? Betting on the team to win. You know, Kevin's nursing a bad ankle. He could use today off. I got to win today. Kevin, you're playing.
Hey, Rob Dibble, you know, guess what, Rob? I know you pitched three games in a row, but guess what? I need you to close tonight's game. I got cash on the game. You know, there's all sorts of reasons. And then if you get in debt to the wrong people, big capital I, big capital F. But if you get in debt to the wrong people, then, and you're trying to avoid that. I mean, that's what you're trying to avoid. It's so murky. And I understand completely. So one thing I forget about this at times is that I always think of Pete Rose in the context of the Reds. I forgot that he played for the Phillies. Even though the only time I ever saw him play in person was with the Phillies. He got two hits in a game that I went to in 1981 with some friends. Or maybe it may have been 1980. It may have been 80 I went. 1980, I think I went. The year they won the World Series. And he got two hits in a game against the Padres. And his years with the Phillies were good. But the other part a lot of people don't realize is Rose was not making over $1 million a year. He was not. And, I mean, you look at the salaries he made. I mean, with the Phillies, yeah, he had multi-million-dollar contracts, but they were spread out. His years with the Phillies, he was with them in 79. What the heck did he do here? What, he hit .331. Then in 80, he hit .282, .325 in 81 split season. Then .271, .245. See, you know, when he got to Philadelphia, he only had two good years, and one of them was the split season. His years in Philadelphia, you take the split season out in 81 because what did that do? But what did he play, 5 years in Philadelphia? Of his 5 years in Philadelphia, he only had two really good seasons. You know, they were up to, you know, he's a .303 career hitter.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I would like to praise Senator Casey for getting it.
See, I'm not the only one, though, that didn't like it.
He said he got to work on bigger things.
I agree. Get that out of the picture, and then we can work on a lot bigger things.
Can you believe the helmets they wore? Yeah, but they won the game. I don't care. Look at the helmets.
I got a funny feeling. Something tells me that that comment might have been taken out of context. I just a guess.
You're cruel, dog.
Just saying. Not sure.
Pete Rose's salary numbers, by the way, before we get to Mike Passanisi of the Mets. He started out at $46,000 in 1967. In 1970, he finally made over $100,000, made $105,000. He did not crack $200,000 until 1977, when he made $375,000. He then jumped from $375,000 in 1978 to then the first year with the Phillies, where he made $905,000. In 80, he made $805,000. In 81, he made $705,000. And then he jumped to $910,000. He then went to the Expos, where he made $700,000 in 84. He made $358,000 with the Reds in 85 and made $1 million. In 86. All told, he made slightly under $7.1 million playing in his career. Just so you know. All right. We'll be taking a long look at Kevin's bank records in a moment.
That shouldn't take long at all.
Well, that sounded kind of cruel. Thought this was your chance to brag.
Just realistic.
Mike Passanisi, for years, worked with the Altoona Curve. He has now taken a job with the New York Mets. Mike, welcome back. It's great to hear you.
Thanks. I got to get to that. I had to go sign a lease yesterday, so I didn't get my voting requirements in yet for today, so I'll have to do that this afternoon.
Mike, talk about your path to the Mets.
I worked for free for a little independent baseball team called the San Diego Surf Dogs back in 2006. We had the first of many stunts and stints by Mr. Jose Canseco, joining the independent baseball ranks. So we had him for all of about two games before he demanded a trade and to the Long Beach team because it was closer to his home. And so we traded him for a Cuban defector named Yoankis Torino. That's pretty much how I got my start in baseball. And then from there, I went to Savannah, Georgia for 3 years from 07 to 09.
Yep.
And then after that season, they did some restructuring. And then I came to Altoona in 2010 as the assistant to now Pirates pre- and post-game show host Dan Zangrilli.
Yep.
And then I got the lead gig here in August, late August of that year. And then I've been in Altoona for the last five and a half seasons-ish. And now starting Monday or Tuesday, depending on when I get all moved in over in New York City, I'll go work for the Mets. So it's been a long time to get to where I kind of wanted to be. And I'm going to step away from the radio side of things for this job. And, it'll be a little bit different for me, but I've always enjoyed the media side of things as well. So it should be fun. It should definitely be interesting, too, to work in, obviously, the biggest media market in the world with the most scrutiny on pretty much anything that is done ever. So we'll see how it goes.
What will your responsibilities be with the Mets? How have they outlined your job?
There's four people in the department, and they're all I'm one of the four, and they're all great people. I'm the lowest of the four. So Jay Horowitz, he's the main guy there. He's been there.
He's the legend.
Plus years.
Jay's the legend.
Yeah. So I'm very much looking forward to working and learning from him. And Shannon Ford works under mm-hmm. Jay, and then there's someone else named Ethan Wilson who's also there. Been there. I think he's been there 10 years. Shannon's been there a long time too. So. I'm just excited to join a very long-tenured, PR staff there. And my job duties haven't totally been outlined yet. I did, find out the other day I'm going to be helping put together some of their game notes on a daily basis. So that's one thing I know I'll be doing. But I'm sure there's a lot of things that they'll have me do, but more of them will be related to the media relations and baseball information side of things, more so than the job that I had with the Curve, where I was kind of more of a jack of all trades for, kind of whatever needed to happen. If I was available, I would help in that role as the AGM for the Curve. So it'll give me a little bit of a chance to focus on some things, which will be a little bit different for me. So I'm curious to see how that goes.
What did the Curve experience do though, to shape you that allows you to make this next step?
Well, I think that, for working for the Curve from that standpoint, what I just said about not being able to really focus on one thing, I actually think that kind of helped me, get the job in New York because I've been able to handle so many different tasks at one time and be successful at most of them throughout my tenure here, I think, at least in my mind anyway. I think that's really helped. I know when I interviewed with the guys over there, especially Jay, he has, he told me he kind of has an affiliation a little bit for guys that have worked in the minor leagues. People in the minor leagues in general, because they know what hard work is. And they know that, they can put on different hats. And 1 minute they could be a media relations person, and then 20 minutes later they could be the social media person. And then 30 minutes after that they could be helping on the field, helping get some turf off the field before a game. Or 20 minutes after that they could be, escorting a group down to their picnic. So I think he really liked the hardworking blue-collar atmosphere of the minor league level, and that's exactly what working for the Curve has been like. Everybody chips in. Everybody is available to do pretty much anything, and it's, you know, one big giant team effort. So I think that's, you know, I think him, you know, seeing that I had done that kind of thing for basically 10 years, I think it really helped me and helped assure them that I would be a good fit for what they're looking for in New York.
You, as somebody who follows baseball intently, you probably felt you had a great handle on every team, including the New York Mets. What have you found out about the Mets that you never realized?
Oh, there's a lot of things. Working, especially, you know, at the minor league side of things, you know, I focus a lot on the minor leagues because in the grand scheme of things over the last, you know, especially 10 years, I mean, the success of the parent club here with the Curve has been much more relevant to what I do than it was when I worked in Savannah, which was a Mets affiliate. But Savannah, Georgia doesn't exactly have a large contingent of Mets fans. There's a lot of Braves fans in, down in Savannah. So it wasn't really a huge core for what I did there. But when I got here, I mean, with the Curve being 90 miles from Pittsburgh and just the fan base here being fans of our affiliate, you know, the tie-in was a lot greater. All of our players went and, you know, have played in Pittsburgh and are now big stars in Pittsburgh, the Marques and the Harrisons and the Mercers and all those guys, Garrett Cole. So I focus more on the minor league level and the Pirates specifically from a baseball aspect of things and still keeping, you know, an eye here and an eye there on what's going on in the big leagues. But now, as you know, over the last couple of weeks, as I've started to get on the Mets email lists and things for their media department, you know, just in general, just learning pretty much anything I can about the Mets, all of it is becoming a little bit new to me. So I've got a lot of reading to do. I've got a nice big thick media guide to read for my train rides to and from work now because I will not have a car. So I don't think that's very smart in New York City. So no. I've got a big media guide to continue to thumb through and read on some train rides to and from work. The organization just seems, you know, they, obviously they've got a new ball field. They're a club that I think is a Pirates club by comparison of like 2 or 3 years ago. I think they're a team that has a lot of young talent that is there and ready to produce if it can stay healthy. And it's on the cusp of being, once again, a very good team, a la the Pirates of 2011 and 2012. And I think that they're right there. And, you know, and an NL East that's, you know, has been pretty depleted. The Nationals have started to pick things up. The Braves are starting to play a little bit better. And the Mets right now, unfortunately, can't win many games away from Citi Field. You know, I think they're a team that's on the cusp of doing some pretty fun things, and hopefully that is the case, and I get to be there to, you know, to help them, you know, publicize it.
Mike, what are the challenges of attempting to do this at midseason?
I think there's a lot of challenges. I mean, for them, they've been very good about the whole thing. And it's definitely been a process. I've gone over there to interview a couple of different times, and it has to work out on my schedule when the team is home, and it has to work out on their schedule when the team is home. So there have been a couple of times where, I missed a Curve game to go over there to interview, and it was, you know, they called me up at a 4 o'clock on a Wednesday, and it's, could you be here tomorrow morning, you know, for a meeting at 11? I'm like, yeah, I'll figure out a way to get there. So it's drive to Harrisburg, get up at 3 a.m, take a train over there, do my interview, take a train back, drive back to Altoona, and then do a Curve game that night. So it's been a process. It's been a fun process. It's been a tiring process, but it's, you know, been an experience. And getting there midseason, you know, I'm curious to see how things kind of go, because they are, I mean, we're pretty much already almost halfway into a major league season once we get into the middle part of July. So right around the time I get there, the season will be half over. So I've got to play catch up a little bit, and hopefully, you know, they are able to, you know, seamlessly kind of integrate me in. But I will be behind in terms of certain things. But I've been trying to, you know, read the notes and just look stylistically at how they do things. And I'm just trying to make it as easy of a transition for them as possible to help them out with what they need. That's what I'm there to do.
As you make this move, what runs through your mind knowing that at this moment you have an opportunity to work in what would be affectionately known as the show?
It's pretty cool. I mean, it's something that I started doing this whole thing for minor league baseball way back, like I said, in 06, and I had the idea that this was kind of what I wanted to do back in 04. So if you take a look at it from a grand scheme of things, I mean, it's literally been 10 to 12 seasons of work and preparation to try and get in a position to get to the show. And it's been a little surreal. I think it really was a little weird for me when I told one of our players that I was going. And I strange enough, I'd gotten both of the calls from the Mets that I was up for, that they were looking at me for the job and then wanted to interview me a second time for the job. I got both of those calls while I was on the bus with the curve back from a road trip. So there's always, everybody sits on the bus in pretty similar spots. So the same guy kind of always sits across from me. So Gift and Gopay kind of had an idea that this was going on, at least throughout, most of the couple months this was going on.
Well, the great guys out there, too.
Yeah, and so when I finally was able to get it and I got the job and I told them, it was weird because normally I go down to the locker room after I find out that someone has been promoted to AAA and congratulate them and give them a handshake and say thanks for all the work and stuff. But it was weird to be on the other end of that. So I think that's when it really kind of sunk in and hit me that, I would be going to a place that all of these guys, obviously want to play someday. It's a little bit different for me in terms of, I don't necessarily have a playing career. I've got more time to get there than they do. So to go, my goal for my life accomplishments was to reevaluate where I was in baseball at the age of 30. I turned 31 last September, decided to stick it out for another season and take on a bigger role with the curve. And it's paid off because I'll started the big leagues at 31. So I guess I'm a year behind where I kind of wanted to be, but, just to get there, a lot of people don't get there. So, and I know that Corey in the paper had written only a couple people from the curve offices have ever gone from, straight from Altoona to working in any capacity for a major league team. And it's not the typical route that people go to get major league jobs. So it's maybe a harder road or a road less traveled, but, that doesn't make it any less sweet.
Well, Mike, everyone has appreciated your outstanding work in Altoona for the 5.5 years that you've been there. They've been very fortunate to have you out there as the voice. The Mets are lucky to have you. You'll do a great job there, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck. Thanks for giving us a few minutes today when I know you're so busy.
Steve, thanks for having me. I really do appreciate it. I've enjoyed coming on this program over the last few years, and I'll keep a watchful eye from 4.5 hours away, and I might find my way back to Curve Games every now and again or into the area. But thanks for everything over the years. I've appreciated it.
Thanks so much. Mike, best of luck.
Thank you.
Mike Passanisi, now working for the New York Mets, working with the legend Jay Horowitz in the Mets publicity department. And in the world of baseball publicity, Jay is a legend. That's because he's earned it. We will come back with the legendary Kevin Herr in a moment. On News Radio 1070, WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kids.
All right, our trivia question this half hour to a chance to win $5.7 billion in prizes. What's a Met? All right, let's...
I do know what that's short for.
That's Metropolitan. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but what's a Met? I mean, really. Yeah, you see the...
Like the Knicks.
No, they're the short for the Knickerbockers. But yeah. You look at the Mets mascot, and you're like, what the heck is that? All right.
Isn't it a baseball?
Baseball with legs.
Yeah, with legs. Right, right. Right. That's the weird thing. I get it.
That's about it. That's what it comes down to.
What is is it Montreal that's nicknamed the Habs?
Yes.
What's that short for?
Les Habitants.
Huh?
Les Habitants. Don't you speak French?
No, I have enough trouble with English. Ask anybody who's listened to me over the years.
Oh, brother. All right. It's an abbreviation for Les Habitants.
Which means?
Which is the informal name given to the original settlers of New France, which dates back to, the 17th century. So when the Montreal Canadiens were established in 1909, they were marketed as a French-Canadian hockey team. So the nickname probably is the result of an error, according to most items you've read about it over the years. Tex Rickard, who was the owner of Madison Square Garden, was the first one to refer to them as the Habs. He apparently told a reporter that the H on the Canadians.
Yeah, in that logo.
You see the CH?
Yeah.
It doesn't. Okay, he told them it stood for Habitants, and it doesn't. It stands for hockey.
Hockey?
It stands for hockey. Okay? The CH is for Club de Hockey Canadien. That's what it's, okay? That's what it stands for. That's what the CH stands for.
See, that is a story that I never, ever would have thought existed.
I mean, Tex Rickard, that's why they're nicknamed the New York Rangers, because they referred to Tex Rickard as the Ranger. So they were nicknamed for him.
Well, I figured Texas Rangers, it seemed sensible.
No, the New York Rangers were named.
Oh, the New, I'm sorry. I was thinking of the Texas Rangers. Sorry.
No. The Texas Rangers makes sense.
Right.
The New York Rangers don't make sense, but Tex Rickard, they called him, the Texas Ranger. So they decided to nicknamed the team after him, the Rangers, just like the Chicago Blackhawks. The Chicago Blackhawks are actually nicknamed for the Blackhawk unit that fought in World War I. And the owner of the team was a part of that unit.
There were two nicknames, and I think the one is a high school nickname that I thought was tied for the weirdest ones. The one is Mars Area. They're the Fighting Planets. But the one that might actually edge that one out in strangeness is Waters Meet Michigan. They're the Nimrods.
I have several jokes right now that most of them pertain to you.
I would have changed that nickname and not thought twice about it. It makes Chanticleers look brilliant. The Fighting Chickens.
More of this nonsense next hour.